We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
When in Seattle, Tommy, did you throw axes at Eddie Vedder's house along with Ron Coomer and assorted other Cub personnel?
No, it's funny. It's cool walking to, you know, out from the bullpen. You're getting ready to start the game, and Eddie's sitting right in the front row, just like just like another fan, just like pointing at you, like, let's go, cheering you on. And just to see him and their fans there and see the support, not just him, but, man, the crowd that turned out. We had home games almost the whole road trip, it felt like.
Middays on the Score.
Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hottovy. Always good stuff with the Mully and Haw Show. Yeah, axe throwing is apparently a thing.
You not gone?
I've not gone to do it. I did it at a friend's house. He does an Oktoberfest, and he does sort of authentic German style.
That's right.
There's
that's right.
Nail pounding. They bring out these big stumps. There's a nail pounding contest. There's a Stein holding contest.
Is this just to get people to do work around his house?
No, do that one again.
There's a siding contest.
Right, exactly.
There's a window replacement. There's a grass cutting.
There's a whole thing about putting shingles on the roof of his garage. These are
gutter
great
cleaning,
really.
Race.
Raking contest. That was a close one.
Yeah, you have won the authentic German raking contest. Good job, yeah.
It's an asphalt paving contest. Very difficult, very hard. But in the traditional German style, it is harder to repave a driveway with asphalt.
And it was weird what he said from his particular town, where they always gather every Oktoberfest, and there's a contest in teaching his high school kid geometry.
Right.
It got a little weird. I really started to feel like we were just doing work around the house for him.
The traditional put $20 in this jar for my kid's college fund, you know, like they do in Berlin.
Right. This is how we do it in my smart town. Have a pretzel. I hadn't really quite thought of it that way, but we did some acts. You got to get the rotation just right. You got to figure it out. I didn't dedicate myself to making sure I got it. I threw it there a couple times. One time it kind of stuck and then fell out.
And when we're up at the lake, we will, you know, there's a couple of hatchets up there, so we'll just take some throws at some of the trees. But you're right. It's the rotation. It's really difficult to figure out how to make that work. I think that is a party game, though, is a fairly interesting one. You've seen the video going around, the Instagram video or whatever, the girl who throws an axe and kind of biffs it.
Okay.
And hits the bottom of the wall. She didn't even hit the target. I mean, it's the bottom of the wall, but it hits the wall, then floor, and then bounces back, right? So it's kind of like a kill shot in racquetball. It hits and then bounces back. It misses her head by inches.
Ooh.
I mean, this would have been the end of axe throwing as a business.
Well, isn't that inevitable, though? Isn't it inevitable? Like, just like when we bring the scooters to Chicago, that somebody's going to get blowed up real good on one of those things, that we're going to have an axe throwing death.
I don't know. I thought the divvy bikes would cause a lot more of the death in this town and in a lot of different places. And I know we've had, you know, some injuries and some issues, and I think we have had someone killed on a divvy bike, but I really thought it would be a much bigger issue, especially since so many people, we were talking about this with Lawrence yesterday, so many people just will ride those divvy bikes on the sidewalk, which I thought would be the issue with collisions and pedestrians, not so much even cars or traffic or whatever, but you're not supposed to ride bikes on the sidewalk in this town because you're just going to run into everybody.
I heard a great discussion on the McNeil and Parkins show yesterday afternoon. I think it was Tannehill that said, can we get the walking part down correctly first before we start introducing new vehicles into this game of Frogger that everybody's playing? Can we just get the learning how to walk down the street without running into people, the number of times that people get jostled trying to get on a CTA train or get on and off a bus and where people are or are not doing certain things vis-a-vis sidewalk or street? Can we just get the walking part down?
I think we've got walking pretty good.
No, not with the phones, though.
That's true.
We're all staring down.
The phone and the walking thing. You're right. I don't know what the fix is for that, though. I don't think there is one. Because we're not taking the phones out of people's hands. They're not leaving anytime soon. Those might as well be grafted into our skins, and they probably will be in a couple of years. But those phones aren't going anywhere. They're humanity's crack cocaine.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Michigan, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. I want to take the temperature of Cubs Nation right now and sort of where we are relative to how we feel about the Cardinals. And the fact is the Cardinals are really good. But as I mentioned before, it's not the same with Mike Matheny not here. They're not as annoying. They're not as easy to dislike because Matheny's presence made them so easy to dislike. But look, we had an offseason in which Yadier Molina and, of all people, John Brebbia decided that they were going to clap back against all of the Cubs and Chris Bryant. Apparently Chris Bryant is representative of his constituents when, just because he believes the city of St. Louis is boring, Yadier Molina went all hardcore about standing up for the city and how that would make its way to the field. Do you really expect anything?
John Brebbia has been really good this season. 18 and a third innings. He's got 21 strikeouts. The whip is under 0.9. I think it's 0.8 and change, something like
Yikes.
That. Yeah, he's been fantastic. Yadi Molina has not been all that great. 261, 288, 387. But as far as catchers go, not so bad. I mean, it's Wilson Contreras at the top of the list for catchers in this game. And then there's JT Realmuto. A handful of others that are producing offensively. Yadi, I think, you know, we were having this discussion with Mully and Haw when we started the show, and during transition, they were kind of talking about it some. Yadi Molina is as much of an aggravation as he can be, especially for Cubs fans, or really if you're a fan of anybody else in the NL Central. He's going to be a Hall of Famer, and I think you got to get your head around that.
Why do you think it's so certain? Just because of how baseball-y he is,
yes.
About where he is,
yes.
how respected he is?
He'll play this season at age 36. His birthday's July, it's the day after mine, so he turns 37 July 13th. He's got a handful of years left on the contract. Remember, they gave him an extension not all that long ago. He signed through the 2020 season, so he's got a year left. He'll retire 2025 is when he'd be first eligible for the Hall of Fame, right? You get 5 years after you're done playing. I would guess that last year is probably his last, though I wouldn't put it past the Cardinals to extend him for another year, even if that does make him like an age 38 or 39 catcher. That electorate, or those who elect, they're not going to change fast enough to keep Yadi Molina out of the Hall of Fame. And I don't even know that he deserves to be kept out of the Hall of Fame, because I think what we've gotten so much better at over the last 3 years, 5 years or so, measuring in baseball, is just how much pitch framing means. Yadi Molina defensively is one of the best catchers of his era. He just is. And you don't have to like it. You don't have to like him. You don't have to like the contracts that the Cardinals signed him to. You don't even have to like the outsized importance that they've put on this guy, this Cardinal avatar. Because that's kind of what he's been. He's been the guy.
He's been the third bird on the bat, he's right? Are there two?
When
they refer to the birds on the bat?
Yeah, two. Looking at a Cardinals hoodie right now. They took Matt Holliday and loved him and everything, but ready to let him go. They've had all these great players come through, and yet the guy that's remained, it's Yadi Molina. And they'll celebrate Albert Pujols when he's done, and he'll have his day at Busch Stadium, and they'll retire the number more than likely. But good God, Yadi Molina is as celebrated as any Cardinal of the last 25 years.
Does he get credit for his brothers in some way? Does he get credit for an aggregation of Molina-ness? He's been sort of the idealized Molina?
He's the youngest of the three Molina, right?
Yes. And here's what's weird. I'm going to try to do this on the fly. According to Baseball Reference, that his wins above replacement is a mere 39. And it ends up being a Jaws score, which is the Jay Jaffe Hall of Fame predictor, mm-hmm. that balances your entire career with where you were relative to baseball at your position at your peak.
Yeah.
And it places Molina 27th of all time. We mentioned Buster Posey earlier. He's at 16th. 28th is Russell Martin. 29th is Victor Martinez. 32nd is Brian McCann.
Do those again.
Yadier Molina's 27th. Yep. Russell Martin's 28th. Victor Martinez is 29th. Okay. However, that's using Baseball Reference's wins above replacement. Mm-hmm. If you remember, Fangraphs changed their catching wins above replacement.
Yeah, they rebaked the casserole.
They did, to reflect pitch framing as part of defensive runs. And where Yadier Molina is one of the guys who got a huge advantage there. We don't usually see this kind of discrepancy in B war versus F war, but Fangraphs has him worth 53.2 wins. Think about that. That is a massive difference based almost entirely on being able to fool umpires.
That's incredible. That's pretty incredible. I don't like... I'm not a huge fan in my own mind of the massive jump, the big math change that we've gone through with those kind of four numbers. I mean, you're adding essentially, 25% onto his career total of worth as a catcher?
Okay.
And that's really hard to justify in your brain, but I would imagine that guys like, you know, Adam Wainwright and all these guys that have pitched to him would tell you that, yeah, that's mattered as much. I'd put another 15% on the guy's worth.
So you're probably screaming right now about that next question, about when we looked at the all-time leaders in Hall of Fame candidacy based on the Baseball Reference calculation. Mm-hmm. All right, let's look at Yadier Molina a little differently here and look at him with, you know, baking into the new casserole where he is. The answer is, by Fangraphs, he's the 13th best catcher of all time, already ahead of some Hall of Famers. Your list of catchers, and this might be a bit... There's another name on here that's going to just freak you out.
Am I going to be angry or am I going to be happy?
Number one is Johnny Bench.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Ivan Rodriguez, Gary Carter, Carlton Fisk.
Gary Carter?
Oh, yeah. Yogi Berra, Mike Piazza, Joe Torre, Bill Dickey, Brian McCann
all right.
is ninth.
All right.
Russell Martin is 10th. Russell Martin has leapt ahead of Yadier Molina. Ted Simmons, 11th. Gabby Hartnett, old tomato face, played right here in this building behind us. He's 12th. Then it's Yadier, in order, Yadier Molina, Buster Posey, and Joe Mauer.
I'd put all three of those in the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
I'd put Yadi and Posey in the Hall of Fame.
But that's
probably Mauer,
but
too.
Just look at the difference that pitch framing makes in the assessments of some of these guys. This is all about the fact that human beings stand behind the plate.
You know what?
And human beings are trying to determine what is a ball and what is a strike.
I was just going to bring that up. This text from the 815, and it's a good... I understand the premise. I understand what you're bringing up here, too. With human umpires, that's what you get. That's what this text reads.
Ah, right on it.
And that's true. But you cannot take away the importance of what catchers have done, what those guys have done in framing or fooling or presenting pitches to umpires. That's the way the game was played. I mean, you can't lessen their impact, or you can't denigrate the skill set or the ability to do what they've done just because you and I don't happen to think that umpires should be calling balls and strikes, that it should be some sort of machinery or a computer algorithm or whatever. I think you should go to an electronic strike zone, but I don't think that lessens the impact that these guys had on the game. They changed a position. Name the good offensive catchers over the last 3 years. You know what I'm talking about? Name guys who have made big-time positive impacts with the bat. You can do it. You can name a handful, but then you're done, because the rest of these guys are defense-first, glove-first, pitch-frame-first catchers. That's what baseball teams, that's what the smart front offices have told you have mattered over the last 15 years. That's what they've sought. That's what they've gone out and tried to find, because that's what makes them winning ball clubs. Like, that skill set changed the game.
This segment's brought to you by the Chicago Dogs. Baseball, hot dogs, fireworks, it's baseball with everything. Tickets now on sale for the Chicago Dogs, your premier minor league baseball team. Opening day, May 17th, fans will receive an iconic hot dog costume and set a world record for the largest pack of wieners in one location. Purchase tickets at thechicagodogs.com. We've got our guy Matt Spiegel on the inside of Wrigley Field, working the clubhouses for us. We look forward to having him join us in just a bit. We are going to do the dumbest possible Kentucky Derby analysis. It's so stupid.
Oh, we guarantee stupidity.
It's so stupid it might make you rich. We're also going to give away a dinner for five at Chewy's Tex-Mex restaurants. We've had our experience with Chewy's just recently. It was an awesome one. Also, your chance to win $1,000 in cash is coming your way in just a bit with a lucky text keyword. I also saw a really cool study that informs sports arguments. It is.
Why?
Because it explains.
But the dumb ones are the best.
It actually explains why certain sports arguments occur, and it's psychological and it's physiological, and there's a reasons why both sides think they're right. Where both sides are certain that they're right, and there's a professor testing this as to why. Don't look at me like that.
That's awesome. But
yeah,
I'm right. Everyone else is wrong.
You know, explaining why two people can argue over what happens with a ball and both can legitimately and truly believe that they are in the right.
Sounds like a lot to do. You wanted to do the dumbest derby breakdown of all time when we come back?
It's up to you when you want to do it.
Can we? Can we put the dumb right here in the show? We're going to do it. We're going to do the
this
dumbest
show needs
derby
more stupid
breakdown of all time. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show here on 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It would be kind of stupid to wake up a sleeping horse, per se.
You never want to wake the proverbial sleeping horse. Thank you to the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern for sending over some food here. Really appreciate it. The loaded potato twists, the home run nachos, their wonderful cheeseburger with the Dijonnaise, hot fried chicken sandwich, Chicago Polish dog, their barbacoa tacos, and a 12-inch pizza.
Yeah.
That is really, it's
sneaky good.
If they made a big one and cut it in big triangles, it would be an absolutely representative New York slice.
Yo, solid pizza, really decent stuff. We've got a surprise. We're out here at Gallagher Way.
We do.
Outside Wrigley Field doing a little Cubs-Cardinals conversation. We'll get to the dumbest derby breakdown of all time in a little while, because when you want derby info, you go to the guy who doesn't know how horses get across the ocean. Instead, we go upstairs to the broadcast booth where we are joined by friend of the program and a real nice guy all around, Ron Coomer, hanging out with us here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Coom Dog, how you doing, man?
Good morning, boys. How are we doing today? And that's a very nice guy. That's a stretch, but I'll take it.
Nice enough.
You know, this series feels perhaps bigger than it should because both teams are really good and both teams kind of on a heater here. Cubs are 7-3 over their last 10, and the Cardinals are 9-1 over theirs. So I'm not generally a believer in statement games or measuring sticks, but Jed Hoyer used that term. He used the term measuring stick. And I'm wondering, is this a heat check at the very least?
I could go with that. I don't think you need to declare you're going to be playing in late October if you sweep this series, either group, you know. Or if you get swept, I don't think you know it's that to your point, Danny. But I do look at it and go, you know, whenever you're playing in this series and both teams are extremely relevant, which they both are. These series have a different feel, and they just do. And I think that's what we're looking at here the first week of May.
In doing some of the research, looking at this team, what's the most impressive or maybe even surprising part of this Cardinals ball club as they've gotten off to such a great start?
Connor, I don't think it's surprising. When you look at this club, you know, they get power arms, and you knew that going in. The when you add a guy like Goldschmidt at first base, the thing that he brings to the table is that he's an adult player, I guess, is one way to describe it, right? He's an adult out there. He's done everything he can do in the game except really win, right? And when you look at him, he is a perennial all-star. He knows how to play his position. He's a great clutch hitter. He's a good base runner. He's great in the clubhouse. And if anything's going on at where the team starts going south, he's the guy you lean on, and they have one now in him. So this is just a good group, you know, and they believe in themselves, and you know, they're a good offensive club. They've got some holes, we've got some holes, nobody's perfect, but they do have a good leader in Goldie.
when you watch Kyle Hendricks and you have seen his struggles this year, it's he becomes a more fascinating subject because of how much he puts into thinking about his job and how he has to be so careful and so perfect almost to generate the movement and the velocity that he needs. Is he okay?
I think he's just fine. Just from a hitter's perspective, I look at him, Danny, and I think I'm probably overstepping my bounds a little bit, but I think it's pitch selection, to be quite honest. He hasn't had great command. He's had good command, and he's had great command at times, but not to where we're accustomed to seeing him. But I believe when a guy does not throw hard and you're not perfect with your command, you need to make the hitter more accountable to the ball inside. And then that opens up. You may not strike a guy out, but instead of a ball going into the gap, you get a fly ball or a ground ball to short, let's say. And I for me, and I say this on the air, if Kyle's not perfect with the command, go inside and start pounding the ball inside for strikes and balls and take your chances on making the hitter accountable to that pitch, and you're going to get some balls hooked foul, then all of a sudden you're going to open up that outer part of the plate for him. And I think you get more soft contact.
He's living dangerously in this league with this ball and these hitters
it is.
Right now.
I don't disagree, yeah. but you're also living dangerously if you don't have great command of the pitches away when they fade to the middle. So I think in my own mind, I don't think throwing strikes inside is what I'm talking about. I think you're either borderline, and if you hit a guy, you hit a guy. So be it. Tough break for him. But that makes the outer part of the plate accessible for him, and he doesn't have to be perfect.
Kuma, I was looking through some stuff on Hendricks just this morning and found that in 0-2 counts over his career, Kyle Hendricks has allowed a slugging percentage against of .227, but this year, almost .540. Would you attribute that more to, I mean, you've got the hammer when you're 0-2. You're supposed to put that thing away. Would you attribute that more to command or pitch selection as it's gone for Kyle this year?
Command, yes, I think that's a big part of it. And I believe also the league understanding what they're getting from Kyle, right? You know, you're not going to expect even a 92 or 93 mile an hour fastball. So you gear your approach down some to, you know, anywhere from 80 to 88. So that is a much easier way to battle 0-2 than if a guy's blazing it up there at 95 and then can throw a change. So it goes back to me to pitch selection and maybe a little bit of the command, yep.
Give us some numbers here. This is a slash line. Batting average .333, on base .400, slugging .556 for a .956 OPS. That is Kyle Schwarber over the last 2 weeks. His numbers in the last week are even more striking. .467, .529, .867. Do you think he's figured something out?
I do. I look at Kyle, and at the beginning of the season and spring training, I thought his approach was great. Not even good, but great. I thought looking at the middle of the diamond and left center to start the year was really good, and he didn't get a lot. He didn't have a lot of success as far as stats go, but I thought his approach was good. He was hitting the ball hard, and he was lining out in this cold weather to left field, hit some line drives at the shortstop, hit some deep balls to the track that the wind held up. And then I really feel like the league started coming inside maybe a little bit more, and he somewhat abandoned or got into a little funk pulling the ball, and that's where he became, you know, pitchable. He's still pulling the ball some, but he's staying through the baseball, and more balls are going to the middle of the diamond. And when they make a mistake, oh my, the ball he hit the other night might still be going. That was a long, loud home run.
Is that a function of the bat's route through the zone and time spent in the zone?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely, Danny. You look at all the great hitters in our league, and it seems like their bat never comes out of the hitting zone. Right, and you can go through time. This isn't something that's just right now. Look at the great hitters right before me. that won batting championships all the time. The Rod Carews, the George Bretts, Tony Gwynns. Pick those guys, and then you look at when guys are doing real well now. Anthony Rizzo's bat stays in the hitting zone a long time when he's going good. Right now, Kyle is hitting the ball well out in front of him and still staying through the ball, and he's able to let the ball get back to him and still drive the ball to left.
Talk with Cubs radio analyst and pretty nice guy, Ron Coomer, here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Yeah.
Coom, you played a lot of third base in your time. We talked to Len Casper a little bit about this the other day. What do you make of David Bodie's defense at third? There have been a couple errors there. Is it process for him? Is it deciding on where to go with the – he's pretty damned athletic for the shape he is. I'm impressed by his athleticism. What do you see when you see him at third base?
For the shape he is, I don't get that part.
He's a big, strong guy.
I mean, you be careful. You go down there and say that to him, he'll conk you right in the coconut.
Never do that. He hit me right in the face.
To me, he's a real athletic guy and really strong young guy. I think he's done a great job at third base, actually. He's had two really difficult plays. The ball going to his right down the line hit slow, and it was almost a do-or-die play. He didn't get low enough to backhand the ball because he was coming up a little soon, knowing he had to backhand it, plant his right foot, and throw. And he made that play around the bag, so that was a very difficult play. The ball hit him in the foot or the shin, made the error. The next play, the next day, hard hit ball, really hard to his left. The ball wasn't hit as hard as his, you know, where he had to go get the ball. And he kind of stumbled, made a 360 pivot. Never really got under control. Should have just ate the ball, threw it away. And so that was his second error. But I really think when you look at the routine plays, you look at how he handles the double play ball from third and how quick he gets rid of it. He has done an excellent job at third base, even though he's made two errors here in the last series.
Talking with Ron Coomer on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're live at Gallagher Way right next to Wrigley Field. If you are headed to the ballpark to take in game one of the Cubs and Cardinals, come join us. Come say hi. Grab your beer. Sit down. Start your weekend with us. Yesterday at this time, Ron, we were reading a fascinating study that Eno Saris of The Athletic put together, looking for reasons besides the obviously sort of slippery through the air baseball for some of the balls going out of the park this year on a record pace. And the research that he and others did reveal that more balls are being barreled up. They actually keep the statistics of barrels. And they also talked to the folks at Driveline and looked at some of their analysis. And we're in an era where you mentioned where Kyle Schwarber is hitting the ball. He's going out and getting the ball out in front of the plate. Everybody is doing that. It's Josh Donaldson. It goes back a little to Jose Bautista when it started to go. Everyone's realizing you automatically improve launch angle when you get the ball before it gets in on you at the plate. This is now a thing. Did you, as a hitter, was this something that you talked about, something of which you were aware?
This is something that's been going on since the beginning of baseball. They just have terms that they're using now, Danny. When you were taught hitting in the minor leagues, when you were taught hitting in college, there was a device, a tee device, that you put these pegs in the ground in front of home plate. You'd set up to a home plate, and they would go in the ground, and all the contact points that you would hit the baseball were out in front of the plate. And the pull side was well out in front on the inside corner, and then you just drew a line back to home plate. So this is something that's been going on a long time. They have a term now when you hit it out in front. There's a launch angle thing and all that. I just think the home run ball has become so much more prevalent, and everybody's trying to do it, that we talk about it a lot more. And years ago, a lot of managers didn't want a guy to hit 230 and hit 25 bombs. They would rather a guy hit 280 and be more of a productive hitter if a pitcher was really good and not be a punch-out guy. That's gone away, so now this launch angle term has become more prevalent, a lot more prevalent, and a lot more guys are hitting the ball in the air. When I was playing in Minnesota, I'll just give you a for instance. If I hit two balls in a row off the top of the cage, Tom Kelly would bark at me, throwing batting practice, and kick me out of the cage as a young big league player. He wanted me to hit the ball on the line, on the ground, and run. And hell, I was a double play waiting to happen. If I hit the ball on the ground on the turf at somebody.
You could be a double play with nobody on base.
You know what I mean? I mean, seriously, I had a bad knee and I was big and you're like, Jesus. You know, so that's just the way the game has changed. It's just the way it is. And, you know, there's terms for it now, but a lot of these things that are going on, they've been going on forever and ever. You know, Charlie Lau talked about hitting the ball out in front. You know, so, I mean, those are all things that, you know, we've been talking on a long time.
When you see Tyler Chatwood throw, Coom, what are you allowing yourself to – how are you allowing yourself to think about Tyler Chatwood in – when you think about him now, what do you think he could do in a month? You know, how are you pacing him forward?
Chatwood's a guy, to me, that's turned the corner, right? He's figured out some of his mechanical flaws and some of the things that were going on with him last year. You know, it's never going to be perfect. He's not going to be Kyle Hendricks at Kyle's best, but not many guys have the stuff of Tyler Chatwood. He's right there with Darvish with maybe the best stuff on the staff. If he's throwing strikes, he could, you know, you could see him pitching late in a ball game for the Cubs. You could see him, if you get an injury, right back in the rotation. He's a guy with, you know, he was reaching back the other night and he punched a guy out coming in with the man at third base. That was 98 miles an hour. You know, there's something to chat at, and he's throwing strikes. It would not surprise me if he's in any major role if he's still throwing strikes with the Cubs in a month.
Wow. Coom, appreciate it as always. And you should know, you only led the league in double plays grounded into once, buddy. You were a lot better than you think.
Amen, brother.
But you'll always have that. Ron Coomer. Brought to you here at the bottom of the hour by the Chicago Wolves. Your Chicago Wolves are up 2-0 over the Iowa Wild in the division playoffs. The series continues in Iowa, then back to Allstate Arena. Playoff tickets start at $15. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for the latest playoff information. You want to do the dumbest derby analysis we can?
I don't know any other kind of derby analysis to do, Dan. I say we do the dumbest derby analysis you can find.
We're
going to
make you stupid.
And you might win some money. Who knows? It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Uh-huh. In your faces. And the horse that rode in on you.
This segment's brought to you by the Chicago Bears. Don't miss out on Bears 100 Celebration Weekend, June 7th through 9th in Rosemont. Pro Bowl quarterbacks Jim McMahon and Mitchell Trubisky meet for the first time to swap stories. See this panel and more, plus free autographs and photo ops only at Bears 100 Celebration Weekend. Visit ChicagoBears.com for tickets. All right, how are we going to do this? Because you kind of sprung this on me without
telling me. I did. Well, we didn't think about it much, you know, just because you and I are both big derby guys. So I figured, you know, for the Score listener who needs a little bit of help with the 752nd running of the Kentucky Derby, which I believe is this year, you know, they've been running this thing for darn near a millennium. You go to the guy who doesn't know how they bring horses across an ocean. Like, this is who you need to go to for your Kentucky Derby odds and betting favorites and whatnot. So I did my due diligence in not looking up a darn thing about the Derby and am now going to tell you your options for who you're going to pick. This is it. This is the day that I get Dan Bernstein to make a sports bet.
I usually do, and I usually have the kids and the wife write down their picks as well.
Okay, so I'm going to provide for you your sports bet without looking at odds, numbers, or any kind of breakdown whatsoever.
I have not looked at anything.
Me neither. Not a single word. I am now going to read for you the top horses.
The favorite is out, right? Omaha Stakes is out.
Omaha Stakes is out, right. He's not running.
Omaha Stakes is not running.
He won't be.
Although he did win the Omaha Stakes.
He did. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I'm told it is the Omaha, what is it, Omaha Beach?
Omaha
Beach.
Okay.
That's the horse that was scratched.
Okay, not Omaha Stakes. And Omaha Stakes is still in.
Omaha Stakes is in.
Okay.
And apparently it is not the 752nd running. It is the 145th run for the Roses.
Yeah, get this right.
At Churchill Downs. That's what we're doing this.
Okay.
Omaha Beach's trainer is Nelson Mandela. Richard Mandela. He'll be... He's very disappointed.
He buried the lead.
He's very disappointed that his horse isn't running, which means that Bob Baffert has three horses running in this race. I will tell you who they are as soon as I find out who they are. Your number
You're not
one,
helping me here.
I'm not trying
well,
to.
We're still without a single horse.
I'm giving you the dumbest Derby breakdown I can possibly
right,
imagine.
But I can't provide any analysis without, I don't know, a name
I'm
of
getting,
a horse.
I'm getting there. It's a slow okay. walk. Let me get you into the
it
stalls.
Should be a hot
let me,
walk.
Let me get you into the stalls here.
All right. In a paddock.
At the Sure. The Chris Paddock of the
Scott
San Diego Padres. Yeah. Scott Paddock. Yeah. Nice guy. In the number one poll, it is
yes.
War of Will.
War of Will.
War of Will. It yeah. was the number
and
one
the
post is
win.
Almost a will and TW.
War of Will.
War of Will.
All right, two.
The jockey is I don't know, and
Larry
the
King.
Trainer is Mark Cassie.
Right.
Cassa.
Right.
He is the number one spot. In the number two, it is Tax. Just Tax.
T-A-X or T-A-C-K?
T-A-X. T-A-X. Like death and, but the singular. And Tax.
Okay.
Tax.
Yeah.
I'm told flew his own plane overseas to make it for the Kentucky
it's like
Derby.
Bruce Dickinson, the lead singer yeah. of Iron Maiden,
Tax right. was able
Tax,
to get there.
Tax is also a licensed commercial airline pilot.
Number
oddly enough, who knew?
Gabriel Saez is the jockey on By My Standards. Gabriel Saez.
B-Y or B-U-Y?
By. B-Y-M-Y-S-T-A-N-D-A-R-D-S. All
okay.
Three different words.
It doesn't end in Z to
no,
stick it to the man?
No, it
no,
doesn't.
Okay.
Nor
okay.
does it have an X anywhere in there because it's
okay.
the mid-90s
okay.
and it's extreme. Gabriel Saez was apparently the jockey on the 2008 runner-up Eight Bells, of whom I know nothing. Gray Magician. I'm sorry, Gray Michigan. No, Gray, Gray Magician. Gray Magician
Gray
is
Magician.
The number four horse. And he will.
Unemployed
four,
lawyer used to call into that.
Number
right.
five is yeah. Improbable, and he's known as a troublemaker around the barn. I can give you that much. It's even. It's in quotes.
No.
It's in quotes here. He's a troublemaker around the barn. I don't
what
know what
have,
that
like,
means.
Fart spray or
well,
something.
Well, he's one of Tim Baffo's. Sorry, Bob Baffert's horses. He
okay.
can get a little bit feisty. Baffert says he's got a bigger engine. He's like a white defensive end. Big engine won't quit.
Mm-hmm.
He's got all kinds of workout warrior tendencies. Vekoma is the number six horse, known for his odd running style. He only has three legs. So it's a little different. And, you know,
every
and really,
third stride, he slams his face on the turf.
It's very difficult for old Vekoma, but
wait,
don't tell a,
is
that
it,
horse.
Is it, it's the coma?
No, Vekoma.
V?
Like Ricola, but not.
Spell it.
V-E.
I wrote down T-H-E-C-O-M-A, the coma.
Sure.
Which is not a name that would inspire fear in rivals.
Vekoma, an odd running style, he doesn't.
All right, V-I...
V-E-K-O-M-A, Vekoma,
okay.
known for his odd running style.
Right,
he doesn't run.
Okay.
Maximum Security is taking a break from a tour on a minor league wrestling schedule and is
or
going to run.
Taking a break from being a bad Stephen King film.
Maximum Security. This one's maybe my favorite, only because of the Greek handle on him, Tacitus. Tacitus
Ooh.
Is in the eight stall.
Yeah. Tacitus.
This is a weird one. Plus Q Parfait.
Dibs.
Nope, Parfait. Parfait. That's what it is. Plus Q Parfait.
I'm calling
plus
dibs.
P-L-U-S.
The letter Q.
Q-U-E.
Oh.
Parfait.
Q-U-E is K.
Well, maybe.
Plus K.
It's a UAE Derby winner, so I don't know if the horse is from the UAE as well, nor do I really care.
Plus
K Parfait. And apparently... that horse is out because Rick Camp has called it. It's done. I mean, Rick's going to get the Parfait horse, so he's kind of done.
All right. Damn it. All right.
Cutting humor, a benchmark on this show, or not. High Call has been scratched, so don't write him down.
I didn't.
Or his name, or the horse's name is High Call Scratched, which would be a very confusing name for a horse
confusing.
On your racing sheets.
Yep.
Omaha Stakes is scratched.
Yes.
Code of Honor is still in. You can take
what number? 13?
Code of Honor. This is the 13 horse. I think I might have to take this horse because he's trained by Shug McGaughey.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
Which, he's a tribesman for
I
me.
I was going to say you're related to him.
I think I've got to take Code of Honor for my horse. Number 14 is Win, Win, Win.
That's lame.
Yeah, it is pretty lame. Number 15 is Master Fencer.
Fencer or Fencer?
Master Fencer. F-E-N-C-E-R. Master Fencer. He's an extreme long shot due to a trip across the world and a different track than he's seen before.
Extreme long shot due to not being a horse.
I'm telling you. I am telling you. He got here via the Japan Road, and as much as Ron Majors...
He got to Kentucky via the Japan Road?
The Japan Road. They made one just for him. There's a road that Master Fencer gets to walk across. I know Ron Majors made fun of me for it last year. I know Mac and Parkins have constantly made fun of me for it. But it cannot be normal for a horse to fly across an ocean. That's got to throw him off.
Well, they're on a plane.
I know, but it's still
not actually flying.
But no, Pegasus isn't running in this. You don't fly across. It's got to be unsettling. Game Winner is number 16. Roadster, 17.
Wait, I'm writing these down.
You're just probably going to pick a horse you wrote down first.
Game
Let's be honest
winner,
about it.
17 is Roadster.
Roadster.
These are too many horses.
They are too. Why are you running this many? There's 22 horses. You
oh
know
my
what?
God, I'm running out of space.
Yeah, well, I'm done. That's it. Those are the only horses you get to pick from.
No,
that's it.
Give me the other horses.
Spinoff and Country House. Country Horse. Country. Sorry, it's Country House.
Are you been drinking
like the butter.
Spinoff. And Country Horse or Country House?
Country House. Sure.
Which is it?
It's Country House.
Okay.
It's Country Horse. No, it's Country House.
Score House.
Those okay. Those are your horses. Oh, that and Long Range Toddy.
Are you adding horses now? They're like
maybe.
Okay. Long Range Toddy, T-O-D-D-Y?
Sure, Toddy, T-O-D-D-Y. He's being ridden by jockey John Court, who at 58 will set the record for the oldest jockey to start in the Kentucky Derby.
It'll set the record for the most times saying ow over the course of 2 minutes.
John Court could have a grabber while he's riding on Long Range
Tie. The guy you hear screaming, get me off this damn horse. when the woman comes trotting over to him, they're bouncing around, she's got the wireless mic, and he's bleeding out the eyes.
He's so old, they're going to need a line change halfway through the race. I can't do it. I don't know. I'm pulling over. Guys, we got to stop at the next feed house.
I'll turn this damn horse around if you don't knock it off.
Yeah, odd strategy for John Court, who will be riding with his kids on the back of the horse like it's a family van.
With wood paddles on the side. All right.
John, you can't enter this in the race. This is a station wagon. You're not allowed to race this.
All right, so you want my trifecta?
Sure. Yeah, we can do trifectas. I'll bet you a trifecta.
Okay.
I'll get you the odds, too.
No, I don't, only, no,
but
I don't want the
odds. Only after you've picked the horses.
I don't want the
only after
never
you've picked the horses.
Tell me the odds.
Carillion? Only after you've picked the horses will I tell you the odds.
All right. I'm going to go with win to win.
You picked the lamest horse name.
Yes.
Okay. Win to win.
Tax to place.
Okay.
And cutting humor to show.
You want to box these up or what?
No.
I don't know what that means. I just know to say it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I want you to wheel the key and key the wheel and box it all up for me.
Give the old left to right, the hey, how's your father, and give it a good up down. Okay, so you want win.
Yes.
Tax, and what was the other one?
Cutting humor.
Okay. Win, as it turns out, is a 12-1 favorite in the Kentucky Derby. Tax is running at 20-1, and cutting humor is 30-1.
Cutting humor is dead. The horse is dead. Has just been announced.
Oh, so he's been moved to 50-1.
I like him. That's got a Bernstein bet written all over it.
Gray Magician is a 50-1 odds horse. The one I've taken, which one did I take?
I'm going to make a lot of damn money if this trifecta hits.
That's said every better ever. Like, no one's ever walked up to the window and walked away and gone.
I'm saying it because I've picked three spectacularly bad horses.
If this trifecta hits, I could win $3 or $5. Like, nobody's ever walked away from the window saying that. I'll take, let's see, give me, what was the one trained by groundskeeper Willie? Which one?
There's a dog running around in the air ducts.
I forgot which horse that was.
Was that Plus K Parfait or was that Tacitus?
Master Fencer. Was it Master Fencer?
Master Fencer he's the one. Bought a town.
This is so dumb.
I think it's even making us dumber while doing it. It's that stupid.
I will take, let's see, I'm going to go with Improbable.
Okay.
By My Standards and Spinoff.
All right. Okay, so you're going to bet these,
Rick,
right?
Rick took plus K Parfait, and Jay, you got some favorite horses? You box these up if you want to.
I don't know what that means, but box me up a country house in honor of a good burger I once had in Clarendon Hills.
Beautiful.
Long range toddy, because it sounds like a drink, which is what I need right now. And in honor of this great segment, cutting humor.
Cutting humor it is.
Nobody's going Rick's with the Bodie Express?
The Bodie, oh yeah, oh right, Bodie Express.
You didn't tell me about that.
I might have forgot. The horse.
You can't forget one.
The horse could be dead. They're all dying now.
That's true. They go to Santa Anita and they all die.
Bodie.
They're shooting them before they even get there.
Bodie Express is listed on this as also eligible. He's just also eligible. He's not going to run, but you can bet on him if you want to. Rick, what are you taking? Plus K Parfait to win, place, and show.
I mean, definitely to win and place. And right. I'm going to go with tax to show because it's steady. You always know it's going to be there.
Makes sense to me.
See what he's
it
doing?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
All right, we'll box those up for you. I'll place the bets. And if you win, the juice is minimal. So, you know, you don't have to pay that much for me.
This is great. I love the texters are taking this.
I haven't looked yet.
They're just taking it so seriously. Why must you be so infantile? Why must Bernstein laugh like a girl? You are being fake.
We're not.
We told you ahead of time.
I don't know
this
how
was
horses
going to
travel.
Be stupid.
This is yes.
And because you sat through it, now you have a chance to win $1,000 in cash. That's what you get because you sat through our horse racing analysis. This hour's keyword is roast. Text roast to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is roast to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. We will have no less a powerful baseball mind than that of Matt Spiegel joining us live next. Bernstein and McKnight here right next to Wrigley Field, live from Gallagher Way. If you're coming to the game, join these folks who have got a couple of cold ones and their Cubs jerseys on and are hanging out, starting their weekend with Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score.
You spend about a third of your life in your sheets. That is, if you're doing it correctly and you're getting enough sleep. And maybe you get better sleep if you had the luxury sheets you deserve. And maybe you're like I was when my wife said, you know, our sheets are kind of eh, and we should really get some good sheets because they matter. I said, no, they don't. Sheets are sheets. Well, she was right. I was wrong, and I certainly wish Brooklinen.com had been around because I had to go through the whole rigmarole of going to the department store and talking to somebody and them telling me about thread count until my eyes glaze over. Luckily, you've got Brooklinen, and because I have Brooklinen sheets and love my Brooklinen sheets, now you get this opportunity of having five-star luxury hotel quality sheets in your home all the time. And at a great price. Because for a limited time, Brooklinen.com is celebrating their fifth birthday with this 20% off site-wide when you shop at Brooklinen.com. It's only until May 7th to shop their biggest event to date. And Brooklinen's so confident in their product, all of their sheets and comforters and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 20% off site-wide is to go to Brooklinen.com only until Tuesday, May 7th. It's Brooklinen.com. Go now. It's Brooklinen. These are the best sheets ever.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.